hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of the State of Nebraska is now open for transaction of business. Draw nigh all ye having business with this honorable court, and ye shall be heard. God save the State of Nebraska and this honorable court.
Thank you. You may be seated. Good morning to everyone. We will begin with introductions from the court. I'm Mike Havikin, the Chief Justice. And now, by order of seniority, as to service on the court, the other members of the court will introduce themselves.
Good morning. I'm Lindsay Miller-Lerman.
Good morning. William Castle.
Stephanie Stacy. Good morning.
Good morning. Jeff Funk.
Jonathan Papik. Good morning.
And John Frankenberg.
Thank you, members of the court. Our first case today is Raymakers et al. Versus Creighton University. Mr. Sullivan, good morning to you. And is it Mr. Hargens?
Yes, sir.
Good morning to you. Do either council have any questions before we begin?
None.
Thank you then, Mr. Sullivan. You may approach and you may proceed.
May it please the court. This is a contract case involving a very powerful institution who is holding its students captive while pressuring the students to submit to their unlawful and unconscionable demands. This has been done without any grievance procedure or process preventing the students from appeal to the Creighton administration. While there is an implied contract between the parties, this implied contract was not modified by the request for exemption signed by many of the students. That request for exemption fails to act as a contract or a modification because it lacks consideration, was the product of coercion and duress, and is a matter of adhesion. Take the vaccine or leave. As the U.S. Supreme Court recently held, a vaccine mandate is a significant encroachment into the lives and health of people. That's the National Federation of Independent Businesses versus OSHA, 142 Supreme Court, 661.
Those weren't contract cases.
Excuse me, Your Honor?
Those were not contract cases.
That's correct, Your Honor. And the appellees have raised contract cases in their brief as a reason for their prevailing in this, and I'll get to that shortly. But
before you get too deeply into the merits, I presume that you are taking the position, as you did in brief, that the order from which you appeal disposed of not only the temporary injunction, but the request for permanent injunction. Is that your position?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Are you contending that the three-page order is unambiguous?
The district court, the trial court's order, I believe, is unambiguous as to the complete dissemination of the whole case.
So if the three-page order was intended as a final disposition of the request for permanent injunction, why would it include paragraphs 4 or 5, which perhaps you don't have in front of you, say that the court finds that the plaintiffs have failed to show irreparable harm, that's 4, and in 5, the plaintiffs have failed to show a likelihood of success on the merits. Aren't those purely applicable to temporary injunction?
I believe those are. However, the order in a whole goes on to explain even more. And at the end of the hearing, I even asked the court, is this a final order? And the judge at that point, Judge Polk, said, I'm not sure. But then when he actually issued his written order, it is very clear at that point, from my reading of the order, that it disposed of the entire thing, because he refers to the plaintiff's petition and uses no it reserved no language, set no further hearings, didn't have the parties introduce any other possibilities for motions or anything at that point.
Assume for the moment that we disagree with you about the existence of ambiguity and that there is ambiguity in this order. How should we resolve the ambiguity?
I believe that even if it is considered a temporary order, there's cases that I think are relevant. If you look at Tilson versus Tilson, 229 Nebraska 64, it's a 2018 case, and it talks about the effects of a substantial right, and it's the nature of the finality stated in the court's own language. So it says, since Creighton has frozen the students' accounts, and that's in the evidence at that point, then the duration of this order is relevant. And so it basically makes the nature of the order and the nature of the issue something that is not temporary in nature, because as long as the case pends, as long as anything goes on, these students are held in a captive, is basically what I say in my opening there.
You would agree that there was nothing in the notice given to suggest that this was a trial on the merits, correct?
I believe that's true. I actually requested, it was an expedited hearing, but I think that the language used by the court, especially in the written order, converted it into a final hearing. There was nothing further that we could have done. There was no further need for any further hearing. The court said, you aren't going to win on the merits, and I'm going to deny it. And he actually even wrote in there that I'm ruling on the complaint as filed.
Is there anything in the record that would show us that the opposing side might not have wanted to introduce additional evidence if they thought this was a trial on the merits?
I don't think there's anything in the record to that, other than the defendant's inaction up to that point. They had every ability to file affidavits and provide documents and things like that up to that point. They had entered their appearance very early on in the case and provided no further pleadings until the affidavit of Tanya Weingart.
And this was going to be decided, whatever this hearing was going to be decided on affidavits. There wasn't going to be any live testimony.
That's correct. That's
so
correct.
If they wanted to bring a live witness, they didn't have an opportunity to do that.
They certainly could have asked the court for permission to do that. There was nothing that prevented that from being a request from either party.
If we were to rule in your favor, what is the disposition? Are we sending this back, saying it states a claim? Are we ordering the district court to enter an injunction? I don't know what stage of the proceedings this rests at right now.
I believe the stage is that it's remanded with direction to enter the injunction, to reinstate the students and put them in the place of the status quo.
So you're asking us to treat the hearing as though it was a full trial on the merits, even though it was entirely based on affidavits.
Well, and again, I turn to cases like Tilson versus Tilson and Hoagland versus City Columbus, which is 274 Nebraska 453, and saying that this is a very unique and extreme circumstance which calls for very unique and extreme action by the courts, I think. The nature of the right that is infringed upon by the school is so significant and has such a permanency to it in the lives, which should be a very short period of time in the students' lives. And it takes that short time and extends it to an unknown future as long as litigation pends. So it requires, the circumstances require fast action. That's why the court gave us the expedited hearing, I believe, because we knew that it was a grave matter. So we moved forward with it. Everybody had full opportunity to present any evidence they wanted. Creighton had at its disposal all the evidence it ever needed. It had all the documents. It had all the witnesses to explain why and why not this should be the case.
Let me see if you can help me untangle the complaint. You're seeking extraordinary relief.
That's correct.
But did you also plead unjust enrichment?
That's like money.
That's not extraordinary relief ordinarily, right?
No. And that wasn't something that we really pursued.
Well, it's complained about. What happened to that in all of these rulings or in this?
It was irrelevant.
Confined ruling.
Yeah, it was irrelevant to the actual injunction of the case. The only thing we truly pled was injunction. The other things are theories to support the reason for an injunction, but there's no request for damages. There's no request for any action on anything like that. So it was an underlying basis for saying, this is why we have a contract. This is what a contract should serve, and it's being breached.
So conceptually, you're saying unjust enrichment supports extraordinary relief. Is that your theory?
In a sense, I suppose you could say that. Yeah. And I've reached my rebuttal time, so if there's no further questions, I'll reserve the rest. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Mr. Hargens, good morning to you again.
Good morning, Your Honor.
You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Bill Hargens, and I represent the Appalachian Creighton University, which I will refer to this morning as Creighton. There are two issues presented to the Court by this appeal. The first is jurisdictional. Does this Court have jurisdiction over an appeal of an order denying a request for temporary injunctive relief? The short answer to that question is no, based on this Court's precedent. But if the Court were inclined to hear this appeal, the second issue is whether the District Court correctly denied the appellants, which I will refer to as the students, request for temporary injunctive relief. The short answer to that question is yes. I will briefly address both issues, starting with the jurisdictional issue. This Court in Wake versus the City of Omaha held that an order denying a request for temporary injunction or a restraining order is not a final order under Section 25-1902, and rightfully so. If you think about it, if you were to allow an appeal from such a temporary order, it would open the floodgates to what amounts to interlocutory appeals that are not recognized in the state of Nebraska.
The District Court, no, go ahead.
Please.
I understand Mr. Sullivan's argument correctly. He feels that this was not just a disposition of the temporary injunctive relief, but it was actually the whole ball of wax, if you will.
That's certainly the student's position, but we respectfully submit, Your Honor, it's just flat out wrong based on the record.
Looking at the four corners of the three-page order, and you heard my question to your opponent, do you think this order is ambiguous or unambiguous?
Well, Your Honor, I drafted it, and I have to admit it is ambiguous. I probably got a little lazy in terms of what I used to describe the relief that was requested. If you read this petition, and there was four of them, I mean, it kind of goes on and on and on about what all they want, and it was a moving target. And so I put in the order. The judge said they were not entitled to the relief set forth in the fourth amended petition, rather than trying to restate that on and on and on. But we also put in the order, which was very consistent with the trial court's comments, that this was a ruling on a request for a temporary restraining order or temporary injunction. And it's clear from the record that that's what the court intended. If you look at the record.
Is it clear from the record?
I believe so.
Did the court say, I don't know if this is or isn't, it's above my pay grade, and that's for you all to decide?
Well, what he said first, though, was the court's ruling is only going, I guess, in regards to the request for temporary injunction. That's what he said. And then we did have a debate over, is it a final order or not? I said,
is that the attorney's and the party's decision, or is that the court's decision? Shouldn't the court know if it's a final order or not?
Well, Judge, I respectfully submit that the court could not enter a final order in this context. This was a preliminary proceeding based on affidavits drafted by lawyers. Many of them are of the cookie-cutter variety. If you read their affidavits, there's seven of them. Two of them were from one of the plaintiffs. It's the same stuff over and over and over again. If I had any gleaning that this was going to be a trial on the merits, first of all, not only would I have brought in witnesses, including the plaintiffs, I would have objected to their affidavits. I mean, affidavits obviously are admissible under a temporary proceeding like this. They're not admissible in a trial. And, you know, I think it's ironic that, you know, the students are talking about affecting a substantial right. Well, what about Crane's substantial right to a trial here? And if that's what I really struggle with on this appeal, and to Judge Papik's point. I mean, if you're going to say you've got jurisdiction over one of two things, the temporary ruling, which that would run counter to 100 years of your authority, or you have jurisdiction over a ruling on a permanent injunction, which can only be entered after a trial. Live witnesses, discovery. mean, if you buy, for example, the student's argument about duress, which, by the way, is only mentioned in one of the seven affidavits by Ms. Culpepper, which says something about, well, I felt a lot of pressure. So they haven't established that in any event, but I'm entitled to discovery on that issue. And are you now going to sit here as the trier of fact based on that skinny evidentiary record developed through affidavits and issue and tell the lower court they've got to issue a permanent injunction based on that? I just have a hard time coming to grips with how that could be the result.
I assume that we determine that the three-page order is ambiguous. What do we look to resolve the ambiguity?
I believe the record and the nature of the proceeding, Your Honor. I mean, if you look at what actually was done, there's no ambiguity in what was done. It was a preliminary proceeding. It was referred to as such by counsel for the students, both in the papers and in the comments during the hearings. It was referred to by us as a temporary proceeding, and it was referred to by the court as a temporary proceeding. The court never said the words, I hereby deny the plaintiff's request for permanent injunction. And, you know, they argue, well, what's left to do if we go back? Well, what's left to do is we litigate the case. We litigate the claims, including, as Judge Miller-Lerman pointed out, whatever damage claims they might have asserted by way of this allegation of unjust enrichment.
But the answer to that seemed to me that was superfluous.
Well, Judge, you know, after the fact, they said, well, never mind. In fact, that was part of the discourse we had with the trial court judge was, yeah, well, I've got those claims in there, but never mind. I'll bring those in a separate lawsuit. Well, the fact of the matter is it's within the four corners of the last amended petition, and although they don't specifically pray for damages, they've got the boilerplate we've all put in pleadings, such other and further relief as the court might deem just, which I believe this court's precedent would say that opens the door to potential damages. But the most important thing, you know, in terms of what's left to do, it's to have a trial, to have discovery, to have motion practice if we need it, and ultimately to have a trial to determine if they're entitled to a permanent injunction. Now, I think the judge was correct in his ruling because based on the temporary exemption form which they signed, to the extent there was a contract, it clearly encompassed that form. And the form, I mean, clearly stated, I am requesting to decline the COVID-19 vaccination until it has full approval by the Food and Drug Administration. And goes on to say, at which time I agree to meet this requirement within the deadline communicated to me by Student Health Education and Compliance. And you know, these are not children. These are adults that signed this form. Ms. Raymakers was, I think she said, 10 credits away from getting a degree from Creighton University. Ms. Quadrell was a year away from getting a doctor of dental surgery degree from Creighton University. They knew what they were doing. And so to the extent there is a contract theory, as Judge Polk clearly said, that's got to be part of the contract. So that's my argument. Unless there are questions, I'll sit down. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
Yes, 1 minute and 22 seconds.
1 minute and 22 seconds. Mr. Sullivan.
Thank you, Your Honor. I draw the court's attention back to Tilson on the finality issue. I think that's a very strong case and encourage the review of that. Secondly, in talking about the applicability of the temporary exemption request, which was titled a request, not a contract, I point to Graham versus Scissortail, Inc., which is 623 Pacific 2nd 165, and states that contract of an adhesion is a problem. It can be construed as an agreement in any way. It is a standardized form imposed and drafted by the party of superior bargaining strength, which relegated the appellants only to the opportunity to adhere to it or reject it, take the vaccine or leave. And so I want to point out that the language of the court and the if you read the complaint that we filed and amended several times to add more parties only, is one of an emergency request for temporary injunction because of the timeframe that the students were looking at. There was no way to hold the rest of the semester back and allow these students to have time for a trial on the matter. The only opportunity to preserve the rights of the students, the nature of their claim, and the gravity of that was to award an injunction, whether temporary or permanent in nature, and that's what we were asking for anything the court could give us. And the court's own language, drafted by the defendants, was one that showed that it was a final order. Whether they wanted to introduce any new evidence or not, the court said, this takes care of all issues.
So how does the time that's gone under the bridge, to mix my metaphor a little bit, affect where you are?
The only thing the court can do at this point is the best the court can do. None of us can turn back the clock, but we simply look at the situation and say, reinstate the students and let them sort it out with Creighton at this point. And that probably means just starting a new semester, but no further delay in their educations. Because if this goes back, or if this ever went to trial, there was going to be extensive delay simply by the realities of life, unfortunately. And the only place to correct that is through the Supreme Court, I believe.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. That concludes arguments of Raymakers versus Creighton.